Thank you, folks, for being here. Just more than one concurrent session to choose from. Truly, thank you for being here. It's my pleasure to be here on many levels, not the least of which is to share some of the work we've been doing over the last 3 years, looking at the effects of different forms and application methods of micronutrient fertilizers on the growth of different crops, wheat, field pea, and canola. And I have to apologize for you folks. I can only speak for the postdocs in Canada, but the primary grunt labor support postdocs in Canada consist of three sources: me, myself, and I. So I can assure you, I was busting it last week to try to get this canola yield data in time. I don't know about the rest of the world, but it's pretty tough in Canada. I couldn't get it done. So I truly apologize to those of you who only showed up for that Oron canola piece. So today I'll only be discussing the highlights from the copper and zinc work. I'd like to begin by acknowledging my co-author, Dr. Jeff Shano. Anyone who knows Jeff knows he's a fantastic guy with a tremendous mentor to work with on many levels, not the least of which is the fact that the guy's forgotten more about soil fertility than I'll ever know. So why do we care about copper, zinc, and boron? Well, as all of us know in the room, they're essential plant micronutrients involved in many different plant physiological processes. Also, in terms of spatial variability and inherent immobility in terms of special copper and zinc within our soils, these are the micronutrients that are most often deficient in our Western Canadian prairie soils. I suspect elsewhere in the world as well, there seems to be a seemingly ever-increasing increase in yield genetic yield potential of these crops every year. So quite obvious, you increase yield, you're going to increase nutrient uptake and removal of these micronutrients from the soil every year. In their defense, it was interesting to see, I think it was the first speaker who he left, to mention the growers below the 49th parallel here also lacked the confidence in soil tests, particularly with the micronutrients, likewise with the Canucks north of the border. So oftentimes, they're not going to soil test. Less than 15% of farmers will soil test on an annual basis. Having said that, we are starting to see an increased number of farmers who recognize, I guess, the foundational, you know, predicate in terms of sustainable crop production is based on balanced soil fertility. So we're starting to see increasing trends of adding micronutrient fertilizers every year. So in due time, perhaps, they may be added more often. So because of that, there hasn't been a lot of research looking at the additions of these micronutrient fertilizers consecutively within a single rotation. And finally, again, in the farmer's defense, it has been difficult for us at the micronutrient level to provide them with confident fertilizer recommendations, especially if the soil test comes back and says marginally, you know, deficient. So it's a bit of a gray area, right? So even though I'm a city boy, I realize the fact that applying these micronutrients is relatively uncertain and risky, not only from a financial point of view, who wants to waste their money, no one, but also from a toxic level toxicity perspective. If you're adding any one of these micros too much, over-applying, you're going to have toxic effects for years. So with this in mind then, as I briefly mentioned at the beginning, the objectives we had threefold. Can we find different effects of different forms and application methods of copper, zinc, and boron on the yields and the nutrient uptake of a common three-year rotation in Western Canada of wheat, field peas, and canola growing on a variety of Western Canadian soils? Also, can we identify any micronutrient interactions, either positive or negative, that may occur when we add these fertilizers consecutively within a single rotation? And finally, are we able to develop an approved soil test method for detecting or identifying those soils that would be responsive to applied fertilizers across a broad range of Canadian soil types? So as you can see, I collected a large number of soils throughout Western Canada, a little over 10,000 kilometers, what's that, 0.6, a little over 6,000 miles I put on in about 2.5 weeks, kept me honest, no doubt about that, throughout Western Canada, so Alberta, Saskatchewan, and Manitoba. And as you can see, it provided us with a diverse array of different soil types to choose from for this study. So with our greenhouse space, we only had room for 15 soils. So which 15 did we select? Let me tell you, it was definitely tempting to cherry pick and kind of stack the deck in our favor, so to speak, by only choosing the usual suspects. That is to say, those soils that are notoriously low-deficient micronutrient soils. And as you can tell, these typically involve calcareous alkaline soils, sandy soils, gray soils, and, of course, organic peat soils. However, like all of you as well, we wanted to increase the inference base of this research as much as possible, so we did our best to choose 15 soils that would accurately represent the diverse array of different arable soil types that we have within Western Canada. And I think you would agree we have a broad range here of different soil chemical and physical properties. And finally, before the growing season each year, we added a basal application of NPK and S fertilizers to each of the pots just to prevent any macronutrient deficiencies from confounding our micronutrient fertilizer response data. In terms of the, let's cover the experimental design next. The first year design, pretty straightforward stuff, folks. We had a two-factor factorial arranged in a completely randomized design, replicated four times. The two factors in year one, we had soil type. So again, those 15 soils went with 12 mineral, three organic soils. And the second factor was the fertilizer copper. So we grew wheat that first year. So in terms of the fertilizer copper treatments, we had five. Control, obviously, no copper added. We had two foliar copper treatments, either copper sulfate or chelated copper, both applied at the flag leaf stage at the same rate, 0.25 kilograms actual copper per hectare. And finally, two banded treatments, either copper sulfate or chelated copper again. And those range, depended or varied depending on the form of the fertilizer and the soil type we were dealing with. And finally, in terms of the design, the second year we were growing peas, so we were applying zinc. So there was an additional factor this year, which was that residual copper we banded last year. So hence, it was a three-factor factorial. But again, CRD replicated three times. First being soils, right? We didn't change the soils. Second, additional factor, that residual copper in the soil. And then the third, again, was the micronutrient fertilizer, growing peas. This year, we added zinc. Same five treatments, control, no zinc added. Two foliar zinc applications, again, the salt and the chelate, zinc sulfate, EDTA, HA zinc fertilizer, both the same rate, 0.25 kilograms of zinc per hectare, applied just prior to flowering. And finally, banded zinc sulfate or the chelated zinc, again, with those ranges varying depending on the form and the soil type. Frankly speaking, we wanted to appear as commercially unbiased as possible with this study, so we ended up going with generic granular fertilizers that we ended up picking up at a local farm and garden center. And wouldn't you know it, the only picture of these fertilizers that I had also had my two kids in it. So here we have Rosalie and Ray. And as you can see in the picture here, the fertilizers contained approximately 14 to 36% copper or zinc in them. So just to finish off here, as you can see, we grew this in a three-year greenhouse study. The first year, we seeded a very common hard red spring wheat variety. The second year, we seeded green field pea. Each year, eventually, we thinned those plants down to three plants per pot and then grew them to maturity, and we harvested it for grain yield biomass. So, speaking of which, we look at the first year grain yield data of the wheat growing on those mineral soils, on those 12 mineral soils after the first year, expressed as the yield grams per pot and the different copper fertilizer treatments across the x-axis there. As you can see, folks, there was a significant response to the added copper fertilizers compared to the unfertilized control. But the highest yields we saw was with copper sulfate, either banded in the soil or foliar applied. The chelated copper, we had mixed results. It either increased the yield when it was foliar applied, albeit inferior to the foliar copper sulfate, but it also decreased the yields when it was banded. So we went through all of that tissue copper data, and the ppm, I think the microgram per gram levels range from like 5 to 15. So I think we added a little too hot of a rate, and there was some toxicity issues there. I think that was the problem. Moving on to the green yield in the three organic soils, again, we see a significant effect of all treatments. This time, they were all positive. Again, with the banded copper sulfate having the highest yield observed. Moving on to the foliar applications here, unlike the mineral soils, where the foliar copper sulfate was able to correct for that copper deficiency in time to prevent any yield loss, here we see that both foliar copper treatments is kind of a, how'd you say it, I guess a better late than never approach. It increased the yield compared to the control, but it didn't, I guess, address or prevent yield loss compared to our maximum yields found in the banded copper sulfate. Also, the foliar I'll leave it at that for a question, perhaps. So yes, and again, the banded chelate copper and the I have a pointer, don't I? Again, less than expected yield response, likely too high of a rate. So some toxicity there, I suspect. Okay, so moving on to the second year field pea grain data. Again, prefacing it with the hard work ethic of the postdocs in Canada, I got to tell you folks, the blood, sweat, and tears I shed during that second growing season, it's depressing, quite frankly, to tell you folks that we found no significant overall effect of those zinc fertilizers compared to the control yields after that second year with the P. Presumably, we had sufficient zinc fertility in those soils. Having said that, thankfully, we had a couple redeeming aspects of the second year data. First off, being that it was interesting to see that the highest yields we observed were in those pots that only had residual soil copper that was applied the previous year for the wheat. So it was the carryover effect. So we assume what's happening here is the soil copper, regardless of its copper sulfate or the chelated copper, are acting as a fungicide, essentially, to control root diseases. Root rot is the most common disease in field pea in Western Canada that decreases yield. So that was interesting. Didn't expect that. Unfortunately, two-edged sword here, folks, that residual copper sulfate had a negative interaction effect with the also banded zinc sulfate compared to the zinc sulfate banded alone, as we see here. We looked at all the nutrient data. It appears to be phosphorus-related in five soils in particular, and those soils all stood out among the rest by having the lowest initial soil phosphorus extraction. Again, we added 20 kilograms per hectare of P at the beginning of each study, so I'm not really sure what's going on here. But again, looking at the pea tissue phosphorus data, for those five soils only, quite clear that this residual soil copper that was banded is reducing the P concentration on the y-axis of both the grain and the straw tissues of these peas. So we next wanted to see whether or not that this was a result, partially we can try to explain it, the soil phosphorus supply rates differences among these. So is the residual soil or residual copper sulfate, lowering the supply rate. So we did this measure using ion exchange membranes, and sure enough, the soil phosphorus supply rates with that residual copper sulfate much lower than zinc sulfate alone. Folks, I have no idea. From a soils perspective, we don't know what's going on here. It's counter to the literature. I'm not a plant person, so if there's a plant physiological reason why you think that residual copper is affecting phosphorus uptake, please, I would love to hear it. So again, when I timed it this morning, I don't know why, but I thought I had 20 minutes today. I don't. Me bad. The last objective was to see if we could develop an improved soil test, again, to try to identify or detect these different micronutrient deficient soils across a broad range of Western Canadian soil types. And I'm excited to say, we'll have to talk about it after, we did come up with an alternative soil copper test that was validated in the greenhouse study. Also, the last 2 years out in the field, if anyone's interested, less than 5 minutes, so all it'll take after the session, gladly talk to you about it. However, being the salesman that I am, better yet, folks, we'd love to see you in Saskatchewan, March 6th and 7th here, for soils and crops. It's the 55th annual workshop we're having. You can also hear about the soil copper test, very promising. More importantly, you'll get to see all the latest and greatest agronomy research in Saskatchewan and around Saskatchewan as well. So, finish off here. Essentially, take-home message here. Someone said earlier, I like that line, the banded copper sulfate provided a timely copper supply. Therefore, it promoted the maximum yields in our study, especially with those organic soils. Applying that foliar copper did correct those deficiencies, and again, prevented yield loss, but only in the mineral soils. It was too late for the organic soils. Foliar copper sulfate is a cheaper alternative for growers. It was as effective, and I would argue more effective, than the chelated copper for most of our soils. The zinc fertility treatments had no effect, as I mentioned, on pea yield, depressing, but that's okay, presumably due to adequate soil zinc fertility. The observed beneficial effects here, so a bit of a two-edged sword. Likely it was a fungicide effect. Thumbs up, it was great. But unfortunately, there was a negative, don't know why, interaction effect between banding that copper sulfate in the first year, the carryover into the zinc the second year. So for us, all we can tell growers is Well, if you recognize you have some soil phosphorus limitations, address them, obviously, but especially if you know you're going to be banding copper and zinc sulfates in the same rotation, you got to make sure you're mindful of that. So regardless what it is, it's affecting the it's affecting the soil phosphorus supply rate, therefore the plant P uptake, and ultimately we see it in the yields. Well, didn't cover that, so I'll skip that one. As always, friends, I am truly thankful for everyone, their time, and their energy that helped me get the job done. So with that, I'd gladly take any questions that you have. Yes, please, yes. Yes, yes. Was it the soil or P uptake? Oh, yes, please, yeah. Did it decrease? Oh, how much was available? Yes. Available phosphorus. So the question was, what was the difference in available phosphorus from year? Oh, sorry. Yes, yeah. Oh, nice. Yes, yes, yes. I gotta think of this now. We did calculate I gotta think of this now. I have the data, obviously. The recovery of the copper banded was about 30%, as opposed to the foliar copper is about 85%. Again, we added less copper, obviously, in the foliar, plus there's less soil fractions being immobilized. But I would say, again, it was about 29%. So theoretically, we had 60% residual copper that could have been carried over. And about 45% for the chelated copper. So again, whether that's going to be immobilized going forward, I don't know. I'm very intrigued to see the third year canola. Are we still going to see that carryover effect, especially that negative interaction effect? Are we going to see that? So, no, good question. Thank you. Okay, thank you folks again for being here. I appreciate that. Thank you.